Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, Vanessa Russo, Lady Maverick, one of the most successful female poker players of all time. You know, take the word female out of that and make it one of the most successful poker players of all time. We haven't talked to Vanessa in just over a year, and we're happy to have her back on the show today in just a few minutes. Also coming up, Spider-Man got sued over a poker game. A guy walked out on a $45,000 bet without paying. And there's a new online poker bill introduced in Congress. All of that ahead in the course of the next hour. Hello, I am Paul Harrah, sitting at the featured table in the poker room at Harrah's St. Louis, while my partner Dennis Phillips is once again somewhere in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I happen to be in the Venetian today.
Oh,
over
okay.
Here, I've had three meetings so far this morning on issues that are wrapped around poker, and unfortunately I haven't played a hand, and I'm probably not going to be able to all day. I'm leaving this as soon as it's over, going to another meeting.
Wow.
Some interesting stuff that I can't even talk about on the air, but it's positive, let's put it that way, and more to come. Can I put a teaser out there?
Absolutely. All right, you keep us posted on that, and you know what, we should just start off the show by telling our listeners that neither you nor I have any interesting poker stories to tell from the past week. We haven't been playing all that much, but there is a ton of stuff to cover in the world of poker, and before we even get to any of that, I got to tell you, the bad beat jackpot here at Harrah's was hit last night, because I walked in, and normally at the beginning of the show, I announce what the bad beat jackpot is here in the Harrah's Poker Room, and I looked up and it said $232,000, which is still pretty hefty.
But okay, last week
it was more than that, and it was hit at 1 o'clock this morning in a 1-2 no-limit game. Quad sixes beat quad fives. The jackpot, $278,000, which means the person with the quad fives got $139,000. The other person got $69,500. And the good news for the rest of the table is they were only playing seven-handed. So the table share, the table shares were $14,000 just for sitting there and watching it happen.
Okay, so did the guy that got beat with the quad fives, did he do a Helmuth type of spiel and get upset?
I wasn't here, I don't know, and I asked the floor, and they don't know who got there first or how it went down, except that it happened on the turn. So,
yeah.
I don't know. But there's been so much action here at Harrah's Poker Room that the backup jackpot is already at 232 the day after
wow.
The other jackpot was beat. So,
wow.
You know, this is the place to play if you want to come over and get in on this. Now, for the rest of it, you tell me what you want to start with. Online poker. The guy who walked away from a $45,000 bet without paying, or the Tobey Maguire poker lawsuit? Which one do you want to go with first?
Well, it doesn't make much difference because they're all three going to be newsworthy stories. Let's start with the joker that refused to honor his bet.
Okay, this took place
that one's so bad.
This took place at the Wynn Macau. In a game where, once you translate it from Hong Kong dollars to U.S. dollars, they were playing 60-120, no limit. Not 60,000, 120,000, but 60 and $120 for the blinds, no limit poker. And a guy who is, by the way, this story is on the 2+2 forums, and it was just posted yesterday, so this just happened over the weekend. The guy who's the villain of this piece, who's referred to as the fish, opens for 14,000 Hong Kong dollars. It's a little confusing here, but there's one caller, and then the hero of this piece three bets it to about five times that. He 5x's it, comes back around to the fish. The fish instantly says he's all in and pushes chips over the betting line. Everybody else folds. It comes back around to the hero. He has aces, so of course he snap calls the all in. Now the fish looks scared and tries to take back his chips and pretend it's a joke, and he mucks his hand and picks up his chips and tries to walk away. But the security and the floor staff came over, told him he had to pay. Then he tried to pull his cards out of the muck. He did. He shows ace of spades, ten of spades. But the floor says the hand was dead because your cards touched the muck. Now the fish says, I'm not paying. And he picks up his chips again and walks away. And the guy who's the hero of the piece, the guy who wrote about this incident happening to him, ends up essentially getting screwed because the Wynn Macau doesn't force this guy, the fish, to stay in the room and pay the what is effectively $45,000 U.S. So the story goes on, and it gets convoluted over the course of the next couple of days, and you have one guy who doesn't speak Chinese and the fish who does speak Chinese, and there's a communication problem there. But the fact of the matter is that the fish is allowed to leave the poker room and go up to his hotel room in the Wynn, and there's negotiations that go on at the end of the story, to make a very long story a little bit shorter. A friend of the fish pays the hero what is effectively about 25 grand. 60% or so of what he would have gotten if they had been all in, and if his aces had held, which is always an important thing, because you know what? You and I have both been in that situation. You get it in with aces against ace 10, here comes the king, queen, jack, flop, and you're dead.
Yeah.
But have you ever seen this happen where somebody loses a huge pot for a lot of money, or even for a little bit of money, and instead of getting their chips in the middle, they pick them up, pocket them, and leave the poker room?
Yes. I absolutely have. Just for clarification, I believe it takes about 8 Hong Kong dollars to equal 1 U.S. dollar. So for rough terms, if you divide that by 8, you'll have about the number of U.S. dollars as well. So this is a ton of money. This is $45,000 U.S., a lot of it. I don't know the official legal status on this, but I have seen it. I have seen it in St. Louis. I have seen it in Harrah's. Those are your chips. If you do not surrender them, I do not think the casino has the right to wrestle them away from you. They cannot force you to turn in those casinos, the chips. They cannot force you to honor that bet. What they can do is take your card and ban you from ever playing there again.
Yeah.
And that has been done before. But while if you physically refuse to surrender those chips, they are your chips. They are not the casino's chips now. You purchase them. They cannot force you to do that. Again, it's rare that anything like this would ever happen. And if they had been swept into the pot and were part of the pot, then they could lay claim to them. You can't reach into it. You can't reach into another player's and grab it or anything like that. But while those chips are still physically in front of you and clearly separated from the rest of the pot, if you pick them up and refuse to do it, they cannot physically force you to put those chips back down there and pay it.
Yep.
They can threaten. Yep. They can coerce. They can do all sorts of things to you. They can ban you from ever playing there again. They can make you look like a total jackass that you are. But they cannot physically wrestle those chips from you.
Well, that's essentially the story I got when I talked earlier today to Denise Dekowski, who's the poker room manager here at Harrah's St. Louis. She said it has happened a few years ago. It happened here, you know, and we try to have a zero tolerance policy about that sort of thing. And I tell my dealers, if there's a bet and a call, pull the chips into the middle, because that's how, exactly as you were saying, Dennis, once it's a pot, it's not the same as it being your chips anymore. And she says,
correct,
if it happens, not only is the player banned from ever playing in this poker room and this casino again, but they're also going to be banned from all Harrah's properties. And with Harrah's being the largest owner of casinos in the United States, that's a lot of places you're not going to be able,
yeah,
to play anymore. So she did point out one thing, though, because I sent her a copy of this story off the 2+2 forum, and she said one of the things that intrigued her was this guy was not just a fish in the poker room. This guy was a fish at the table games, too, which is why the casino loved this guy, and that may have come into play in the way they decided to treat him kind of with kid gloves. But to respond to that, I would say, what if he did this at a blackjack game? You know, he hits on 14, he gets a face card, he busts before the dealer reaches over to grab the stack of chips that he's bet and pull his cards in. He grabs his chips and he walks out. I think they would treat that a little bit differently, and the big difference there is you're then playing against the casino as opposed to at a poker table where you're playing against the other players. Am I about right on that?
You are, and my argument, because I agree with you 100%, the way the casino would look at it, if it's at a no-limit table, it's player to player. The argument is between the two of them. They will support you, they'll do what they can, everything like that, but they cannot physically get involved into it. If it's between the casino and a player, then those are the two of them, and then it can be actually, they probably, again, will not physically take the chips from you, but then they can call the police. They can accuse you of stealing the chips. They can accuse you of a lot of other things. So I think they would get more involved. There's a big, big difference there. If it's player to player, they're going to sit back. They're going to try and monitor it. They're going to try and do what's right. If it's casino to player, big, big difference.
And Denise said that the number one thing she would do and her supervisors would do is try to negotiate with the two people to get something settled here, because you don't want ugliness like that in your poker room at any times. But the lesson that we've learned here, you know, we talked about money that was stolen off of games where cash was allowed to play on the table at the Bellagio and other places. The lesson you learn here is if you're the guy with aces in that situation and the other guy says all in, you say, okay, push your chips in. I mean, it may look like you're just slow rolling and waiting, and it's hard in that situation to not jump out of your chair and say, I call, but you may want to be 100% sure that other player's chips are put into the middle of the table before you put your, and by the way, your chips are going to have to go into the middle of the table as well. A lot of situations happen like this where some players at the table say, just deal it out and we'll see what happens, and you'll figure it out afterwards. That gets awfully messy and can lead to situations just like this, wherever you're playing.
Exactly. And again, I'll stress it. My understanding, as long as the chips are clearly separated, where they know which ones are his chips, then if he picks them up, you got a problem. If they're commingled whatsoever, even with somebody else's blind or something like that, and he picks them up, then he's in trouble. But if they're clearly separated, where they are absolutely guaranteed to be his chips, then there's a problem when he picks them up.
All right, now let's go on to the Tobey Maguire case. Tobey Maguire and Ben Affleck and Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio and other big Hollywood stars, Nick Cassavetes, Gabe Kaplan, well known for his years on High Stakes Poker and Welcome Back, Kotter, and others. They had some high stakes cash games that they ran, not at the Commerce or at the Bike in Los Angeles, but private games that they ran at places like the Beverly Hills Hilton or some of the other really upscale hotels in town. They would rent a suite and have food and professional dealers and drinks and who knows what else was going on in there. And they had a woman who ran these games for them, $100,000 buy-in games, and one of the people who played in those games was a guy named Brad Ruderman, who ran an investment company. He lost some $25 million of investor money in these games that were held twice a week over the course of several years. And now, a lawyer for some of the people who were investors in that hedge fund are suing Tobey Maguire and a bunch of other people who were in these games, claiming they were running an illegal enterprise and should never have been able to get money from a guy who was illegally embezzling it from his clients who were the investors here. This is a very odd story. I've never heard of something like this, where somebody took stolen money, brought it to a poker game, lost it, and the people the money was stolen from went after the people who won the hands. Have you?
Actually, not that particular scenario, but there is a precedent for it in law, I believe. Because if you take stolen money and go buy a house with that stolen money, and they can prove that it was the stolen money you used for, the people it was stolen from can lay claim to that house. And the person that ends up getting screwed is the person that owned the house originally. And then it's got to be all sorted out on the courts. This is somewhat of a similar type of a scenario. Now, you didn't lose $25 million in these particular hands. Matt Damon didn't win this, or Nick Cassavetes or anybody. But he did lose a ton of money there. He lost it to a variety of different people. And they are claiming that it was not his money to lose. It was stolen money. Therefore, he couldn't lose it. and the people that he stole it from have the legal right to go back and get it. I think they have a very good legal defense there. I think they can probably do this.
What if this guy had gone to Hollywood Park, the racetrack out in the Los Angeles area, bet on the ponies a lot of money every day for a year, and consistently lost? Could those investors then sue Hollywood Park and say, we want that money back?
Yes. I honestly think they could. Now, collecting it from Hollywood Park versus an individual, because what he did at Hollywood Park was a legal entity, was a legal bet, was sanctioned and regulated and taxed by the state there. It's going to be much more difficult for him to get it back, and I don't know that he would win that. But their argument is that this was an illegal game to begin with. They should not have been participating in it. Therefore, why should people benefit from an illegal game and take money from his victims? I think they've got a legitimate argument.
Well, let me just point one thing out here. It's not illegal to play in a poker game in somebody's home or in a hotel room. It's illegal to run a poker game and take a rake. And if this is the home game that I think it is, because I've talked to some of these celebrities that we've met over the course of the years, I'm not going to mention any names here, but some of them have played in at least one home game where the rake is $100 a hand. Somebody was making a lot of money over the course of a night. That's a lot of hands. That's a lot of money. I know a suite at the Beverly Hills Hilton probably costs a lot of money, but all these people could certainly afford it. Somebody was making money off that, and that's part of the problem there. So go ahead.
And I would bet that this lawsuit names not only the players, but also the people that hosted and ran the tournament. It may even go so far as to name the hotel as a defendant in this. Because they usually do these things, they open up their arms, they name everybody possible, and they let the courts decide who actually ends up paying.
It very well may be true. Okay, a little story about, or a few stories about the World Series of Poker, which is now into its fifth week and still doing very well. They are still getting record turnouts. Congratulations to Jason Mercier, your buddy who was, like you, a member of Team Poker Stars. Jason won his second bracelet just a week ago in the $5,000 buy-in PLO 6 Max. He's had a heck of a year. Earlier in the series, he came in 7th. In the Deuce of 7 Low Ball Tournament, he came in 14th in the 10K 7 Stud Championship and 27th in the 10K Omaha 8 or Better Championship. He has earned two-thirds of $1 million at the World Series alone this year. Pretty good.
And it's very good, and he's that caliber of player, so I'm not surprised he has won that. What I was surprised, I believe it was last year, where he went through about 27 or 28 tournaments and never cashed.
Yeah,
that to me was more amazing because he's just too good a player.
Well, remember that this is the same guy who also won the NAPT High Roller in 2010 and 2011.
Right.
Jason is one of those players, when he sits down at the table, other players pucker up in ways that they really don't want to. Speaking of people who have been doing well, Daniel Negreanu, over the weekend, I don't know if you saw this, Daniel was multi-tabling at the WSOP. You may remember last year, Durr was playing the 10K stud while he was down to the final table of the $1,500 no-limit event, which he eventually finished second in, scaring the heck out of a lot of pros who had bet money against Durr getting a bracelet. 2 years ago, Phil Ivey actually won one of his bracelets while he was multi-tabling. This weekend, Negreanu was multi-tabling the 10K PLO. He eventually busted out on Saturday on day two, and the 5K 6 Max, where he was, like, there were like three tables left, and he ended up finishing 19th, but he was running back and forth and playing both of them. One of the tournaments started day two at 2:30. The other one started day two at 3 o'clock, so he had a half hour or so, but he was running back and forth. Multi-tabling live events, not quite the same as multi-tabling online. Congratulations to Daniel for cashing in at least one of those. And speaking of Durr, he had people sweating again, made it to the final table of the 10K horse, where he ended up finishing fifth.
Yep. Just as a word of note, and I don't know what his figures are now, but Durr played 27 of the first 29 events over there. He was multi-tabling almost every day.
Yeah.
27 of the first 29, and of those, I think he only cashed in one of them. But since then, as you said, he just made a final table and has done well. I can't imagine playing 27 of the first 29 and sprinting back and forth between tables.
I can't imagine having to play two or three tournaments every single day. The exhaustion is going to have to set in after a couple of weeks of that. But then again, you and I are twice Durr's age, so exhaustion comes a little more quickly. All right, and before Good we point. Get to Vanessa Russo, who will join us here in a couple of minutes, let's talk about the new online poker bill that was released this week by Congressman Joe Barton, a Republican from Texas. The technical name is the Internet Gambling Prohibition, Poker Consumer Protection, and Strengthening UIGEA Act of 2011. It essentially is just an online poker bill. It would allow for licensing and regulation, but not the taxing of online poker. Now, you got to remember, whenever a bill is filed in Congress, what you hear about it initially is not the way it's going to end up later on. But it does go into some of the things that were in the Reid bill at the end of last year, including the determination that they would set up some sort of Office of Internet Poker Oversight that would regulate who could get in there. The Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary of Treasury would help decide who would be able to get licensed on a federal level. The states would have to opt out instead of opting in, which is, I think, is a good thing, so that you don't have every state legislature having to decide, yes, we want to be in. They would have to decide whether or not they want it to be out. And I know you've seen the bill and wonder if you have any comments on it.
I do have a few. It is an opt-out rather than an opt-in, but the only people that are starting out opted in that are included in it are those that already have existing casino-type setups. So anyone who is at the present time without any kind of a gambling setup is already out and would have to opt in. So it's kind of a combination of the two there.
Okay.
There's a few other things that are definitely lacking in the bill that I hope they address. They did get a lot of social conscious things. They were worried about underage gambling. They were worried. In fact, they went so far as to make using credit cards illegal.
Yep.
Which I think is an oversight. That's gone a little too far. They said you can use a debit card, but that basically you can't use money you don't physically have to use gaming online.
I disagree with you. I think that's a good thing.
Okay. Well, I think it went a little overboard on the civil liberties things. I think you should have that option. That should be your responsibility and your decision.
Okay.
I understand why they did it, and the reason they did it may not be a bad one, but I think it is infringing, again, upon personal liberties there, and I think that's a decision that should be left to each individual, in my own opinion. So, my God, I'm sounding like Barney Frank. That's scary. All righty. A couple of other things there. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the question is, who would be able to get licensed? And the bill says anyone getting a license in the first 2 years after licensing begins would have to run an appropriately large licensed gambling facility in the U.S. for 5 years prior to their licensing. Appropriate large means someplace with at least 500 slot machines or video poker, 250 poker tables. Do we know any place besides the World Series of Poker that has 250 poker tables? Or would... Would companies like Pinnacle and others with multiple locations, would they qualify because you could put all of those together? I don't know. Horse tracks would be allowed in. It doesn't say anything here about the current online poker operators, including Stars and Tilt and the others that have now been banned from operating in the United States, to my understanding.
Well, to my understanding, again, I this is a little bit gray area. It isn't written quite as well as I would have liked it to have. But if you do not have, at present, a license to operate in the United States, and those online sites do not, you would not be able to, for at least a period of 2 years, be able to get a license. So for that period of time, as the bill presently stands, they would not be allowed to operate within the U.S. So that's in some ways similar to what the Reid bill was like.
Yep.
I also don't like the way that there's nothing written in there about the taxes and how it's going to be distributed. I don't like the way that there's nothing written in there for the state-by-state compromise and how that would, in effect, be done. So that it, like a lottery, if 10, 12, 14 states wanted to get together and do it, how that would be handled. There's a lot of open areas in there, but even that being said, it is a step forward. It is something that is a positive move, I think, for poker. Hopefully it can be amended. Hopefully it can be some of the gray areas can be cleared up. And hopefully sites won't be penalized boy, I'm trying to politically say this correct. How do you say it? You know what I'm trying to say, Paul. That somewhere or other will end up in the long run with a level playing field, that everyone who runs an ethical play site, everyone that coordinates with the DOJ, everyone that opens up their books and follows the guidelines and follows the rules will be allowed to participate in the U.S. How's that?
I think you said it perfectly, and I agree. And Congressman Barton says he has checked around informally with the Republican leadership in Congress. He says he feels good enough about the bill's chances to move forward that he says, quote, this may be the year that the stars align. At least he hopes so. We'll keep you posted on that and lots more. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and Lady Maverick will join us. That's Vanessa Russo. Coming up when we continue with more of the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at Harrah's St. Louis here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, with our podcasts on iTunes and on thechipleader.com, and brought to you in part by Homestead Financial Mortgage.
Kits, does your granny lend you money? Well, this granny does. And right now, calling 800-GRANNY-8 will get you $50,000 for just $238 per month. Call 800-GRANNY-8. Get a low fixed rate and take a three-month payment break. That's 90 payment-free days to get your finances straight. Our customers are saving hundreds per month, and our friendly loan officers make it easy. Call 800-GRANNY-8 or apply online at granny8.com.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, coming to you live from Las Vegas and from the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the tournaments go on 13 times a week, and this weekend will be one of the big weekends here, with not only the $160 tournament on Thursday night and the $125 on Friday night, but also the $125 on Saturday afternoon. That in addition to 10 $60 events during the week, including the ones after work when you're done with your 9-to-5 job. You can come over here and register and play in the 7 o'clock events, which always get a terrific turnout. And if you're looking for some cash game action, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the bad beat was hit last night, $278,000, but the bad beat backup is now the main, and it is $232,000. Lots of cash action here because of that, and lots of things going on at Harrah's as well. There's a new Kelly English Steakhouse that'll be built and open up later on this summer. In the meantime, lots of other restaurants, including Charlie Gito's and the buffet, and, of course, all the table games you could possibly want, plus the only casino I know that has put 25% of its entire floor space aside for smoke-free slots. That's Harrah's St. Louis. For information on the poker tournament schedule, go to harrahs.com/STLpoker. In our guest segment today here on the Final Table, we're happy to welcome back Vanessa Russo, Lady Maverick, who has more than 40 career cashes, more than a dozen of those at the World Series of Poker. She's got more than $4 million in tournament earnings. She last year was on with us to talk about her one-on-one poker app, which is a huge seller for the iPad. And now she's here to talk a little bit about the main event prep camp she's doing, her second annual, coming up just before this year's main event gets underway at the World Series of Poker. Vanessa, welcome back to the Final Table.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Before we get into questions, and I know Dennis has a bunch of things, we have to ask about the most important thing in your life. How is your husband Chad's health?
Yeah, it's interesting that you actually asked me about that today. You know, he's going in for a pretty big scan today, so we'll get some news in the next few days about, you know, this is the first big scan he's had since the surgery, and to see if, you know, hopefully the surgery got all the cancer out and we don't see anything growing back. And so today's kind of a big day, but, you know, all signs indicate you know, that he's extremely healthy. He looks great. He's going to the gym. If you saw him, you wouldn't even think that he was sick. And so so he seems to be doing wonderfully.
That's great.
Well, I love to hear that, because there's no doubt about it, Chad is one of the good guys of poker. You can't find a single person that ever has a bad word to say about Chad unless he's just taking all their chips.
So. Right.
So, Vanessa, how's your series going so far? I know you played in the 10K 6 Max yesterday. Did you make it to day two today?
No. That was like pretty much the worst day of poker I've had in a long time. It was so weird. It was like two levels in. I was my table chip leader. I had like 38,000 I was up to at one point. We started with 30,000 and I come back for level three, and in a span of 40 minutes, I get all in with the nut straight against an eight high flush draw for 13,000 of my chips. And I have the queen high diamond redraw. He hits the flush on the turn and I have a redraw and I don't hit. So I lose 13,000 bam there. Lose another 10,000 with flopping top two kings and jacks to a gut shot ace 10 that hits the river. And then the kicker is, once I'm down to about like 9,000 or so, I get all in with aces to queens. We're heads up in queen high flop and, gets tough set and I don't hit an ace and, that was that. So it was a pretty shocking 30 minute period. It was like, and that wasn't even, I actually flopped top set 10s. And then someone turned a flush and the board didn't pair. It was like in a span of 30 minutes, everything possible went wrong and I was out in like level three. And I was like, had just had so many chips and I was like so in the groove and, just wasn't meant to be. It's sort of been like that for me this series. I've played a total of five events now. But they've all been really big buy-ins. Like I played the 25K heads up, the 10K pot limit hold'em. So, like, my budget for the series was $80,000, and I'm spanning that over a total of about eight events that I plan to play total. I'm five down at this point without a cash. But, like, things have been going pretty crappy. I mean, we had that tournament yesterday, and then in the heads-up, I went out in round two with set over set, which heads-up, that's, like, super rare to happen. And that sucked. And so, you know, just things haven't been lining up great. But coming off a final table in Madrid leading into the series, so... I know I'll have, if I don't have some success during this series, you know, the World Series will be here again next year, and so that's okay. I'm not impatient.
Well, let's talk about something that's a little cheerier. Why don't you give us the details of your camp, how long it runs, and what's the caliber of players you're trying to attract, and what's going to be the emphasis of this particular camp, because I know it's a little different than what you usually do.
Yeah, see, my normal camps are usually like game theory and poker, or I'll talk about a niche subject area like reading people or how to build a big stack, how to play loose aggressive effectively, etc. This camp is all about the main event. It's how to play. I mean, obviously, you can apply these skills to any kind of main event, but we break down the blind structure of the WSOP main event level by level, talk about strategy tweaks that you want to make at different points in the tournament. We talk about, we analyze, you know, hand selection at different phases in the tournament, how to handle different player types that you'll likely encounter in this tournament. And so the whole thing is 6 hours intensely targeted at tackling the main event.
So when you talk about the all of that as prep, this is the sort of thing that somebody who's never played before would want to do, or somebody who perhaps is kind of a semi-pro who maybe plays in some of the other events would come to learn the difference between playing in a 1K or 1500 and playing in the main event. I mean, again, as Dennis was asking, who's the target for an event like this?
Sure. I mean, the target is, I think if you look at the makeup of the field of who plays the main event, a large pool of people. Obviously, I'm not targeting professional players, obviously. However, short of professional players, I mean, they only make up, maybe 1%. And so, the casual player who's won a seat, or the casual player who's thinking about trying to win a seat and wants to play a main event at some point in his life. I mean, I'm definitely not a total beginner poker player, because we're going to hop right in at the intermediate level. I'm going to assume people know about things like position and pot odds and things. Like, I'm not teaching those concepts at this camp. So, you know, at least a player who is considering playing the main event or a main event at some point in the near future.
Okay. A question for you. Does that mean that you will get into the prepping of it physically and mentally? How do you prepare to sit down to this monstrous of a tournament, this long of a tournament? You know, how do you get into that very much? That's a difficult area.
Yeah, those sort of tips are, I would say, woven into the fabric of the camp throughout the day. Like, I will be it's one of the advantages that people get in my camps is that they get kind of two for one. They get the information that I've gathered in the course of my career, but they also get a lot of the information Chad's gathered over the course of his career, which has been a little bit longer than mine. You know, he's taught to me, and then I'm able to also pass that along. And so over the course of the camp, I'll throw out anecdotes about myself and Chad and different lessons and how those different lessons apply to approaching a big event like the main event.
Vanessa, we've got the big change this year, of course, after Black Friday. No more online poker. We're probably not going to see nearly as many people in the main event. By the way, you got a prediction for the main event? Because Dennis, before this whole thing started, said 5,273, and I snap-called on the under. Daniel Negreanu went way under to 3,284. What do you think the number is going to be for the main this year?
Gosh, how many was it last year?
7,300, a little over. 7,319, I think.
And so the over-under right now, you put it at 5,300?
Yeah, right around there.
I think that's a good over-under. To be honest, I think that's a good over-under. I may be willing to take over, actually, based on how surprisingly large the fields have been. I mean, in the 10K, or the 5K that I just played a couple days ago, the field was like 800 people, and that was surprisingly large for me. So, you know, I think that's a good over-under because I'm sort of indifferent between over and under on that number.
Okay. But my question was going to be, since, you know, we're in the post-Black Friday era, regardless of how many people are actually going to show up there, you're going to have a lot of people who may never have played a huge live event like the main event in person. They may have played huge fields online, but not like this. Are you going to talk to them about the differences between online play and live play, and in particular, reading tells?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I usually gauge. When people sign up for my camp, they fill out a questionnaire, and I always read these questionnaires, you know, because the camps are usually a pretty small group. I mean, between 20 and 40 people, and sometimes I have bigger camps, but this will be between, I expect, 20 and 40. And I'll read these questionnaires and try to address the particular makeup of that camp. So if I find that in this particular camp I have, you know, more than a couple people who are making that transition, then yes, that would be something that I would address. If not, then I also have a Q&A period, and then during breaks people come up and ask questions. And if that were a specific question that one or two players had, I would be happy to answer them.
Dennis, do you find that reading live tells is one of the big problems for people going to the main event for the first time?
It is for some of them. They are uncomfortable about it. They don't even look at the other players. They definitely are missing a key aspect of the game, and you do see that. A lot of times if they make it to a day two or a day three, they start picking up on it and start realizing that, hey, I better get my act together. But definitely there are people that just don't even consider that as part of the game when they first sit down, and that is a plus for us and a detriment to them.
Vanessa, talk a little bit about how the main event structure affects somebody's games. Give us a little preview of what you would tell people about going and playing in this. You know, it's a $10,000 buy-in. You get $30,000 in chips, but the rounds aren't 20, 30, 40 minutes like you might find in a local casino event, or even an hour as you'd find in some other big events. It's a two-hour level each time.
Yeah, and the thing is that I would say the blind structure goes through four or five major transitions in terms of the strength of the average chip stack as compared to the cost of a one round of player, or how steep the blinds and antes are. And the changes, the ebbs and flows that the blind structure goes through ought to be in causing you to change your hand selection strategy and also your betting strategy. You know, I can give you one, you know, just easy intuitive example. If, let's say, like, it were really expensive for everyone to play. Like, say that every round of play, the antes are really big, and the blinds and antes are big. Well, then in that situation, it's obviously there's more incentive in that situation to make higher variance plays, to take risks to place those chips. A, because there's more to win should you win the pot, you know, with an aggressive re-raise before the flop, for instance. Because there's so many blinds and antes already in that pot, so A, there's more to win, and B, you're going to need to win pots more quickly to survive the quick pace of the blinds and antes going around. So, and then I will go, you know, in the camp, for instance, I would go through specifically and say, okay, this blind blind level is an aggressive anti-structure. And that means that, you know, we need to let higher variance plays into our game. Here are some examples of how you can play. Yes, there's some more risk in these plays. However, in the long run, you will reap higher rewards if these plays are successful. And you need to take the risk to do these plays in anti-structure such as this. So that's like a one example of something I would talk about.
That's six. Now, I know you've got it's a six-hour course. You're going to cover a lot of things and in a lot of depth in that. But for the person going out for the first time that's not going to be lucky enough to participate in your school there, can you give one or two do's or one or two don'ts and how they should formulate a strategy going into this? Just something basic and broad that a 1-3 player could pick up on.
Well, I would say the first thing you want to do is you want to stick to your game. One of the earliest lessons that I learned in my career was that, you know, like when you start having success or when you start taking chances and you have, you know, your friends, your buddies who also play poker, and here you are playing in a big event for the first time or the second or third time, and you've got everyone in your ear telling you, you know, this is the best way to play. No, this is the best way to play. And the thing is, in poker, there is no one optimal way to play. There are many different successful strategies out there. I mean, we know that. Look at the heterogeneous nature of successful professional poker players out there today. I mean, you know, you have Felivy and then you have Tom Dwan. They certainly don't play the same way. And so so the thing is that you don't want to use the main event as your opportunity to experiment with things that you're not comfortable with. You want to stick to your game. So do the things that you do well. Avoid the things that you don't do well and stick to your game. That's to me, that's the most important thing.
I also remember one piece of great advice you gave to our listeners about 15 or 16 months ago before St. Louis hosted its first ever World Series of Poker circuit event. I asked you, what would you tell people who are coming and playing in large fields for the first time, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 800 players? And the very first thing you said was, don't tell everyone at your table this is your first time. Does that apply to the main event too?
For sure. I mean, that's the worst thing you can do. I mean, that's like telling a bunch of sharks that you're bait right there. you want to try to discuss as much as possible. Poker is a game of information, a game of incomplete information. The more information you give your opponents, the harder it's going to be for you. So you want to keep that information from your opponents. You absolutely don't want to give that away because that's going to be very telling for them.
If you want to go to Vanessa Russo's Big Slick Boot Camp, it's going to happen on day 1A of the main event this year, and not at the Rio. It'll be at the Aria at 11 o'clock that morning. That's Thursday, July 7th. So if you're playing 1B, 1C, or 1D, go on 1A over to the Aria. Your $300 investment may end up bringing you a really, really big return here. You can get more information at BigSlickBootCamp.com. Or you can call 877-33-SLICK. Or maybe we can talk Vanessa into giving away a seat in the boot camp right now. What do you think?
I was intending to do that. So I guess for the first listener who hears this and acts on it, they will be the lucky recipient of one free entry into the main event prep camp, which is, like you said, July 7th. 11 a.m. at the Aria. Details at BigSlickBootCamp.com. Here's what you have to do to win. You have to tweet me at my name, which is at Vanessa Russo, VanessaRousso, with the words, work hard, play hard. So have at it.
Work hard,
first
play
one,
hard.
The first one who tweets that to me, which I guess, you know, will be pretty soon I'll check here. And then first one to tweet me with that will be the winner.
Yep, and by the way, you have to actually be planning on being in Las Vegas because this does not include airfare or hotel or anything. Vanessa's not flying you out to the boot camp. You would actually be planning on being there.
And it's transferable, so you can give it to one of your buddies who is in Vegas if you won't be able to come. But, yeah, it's July 7th here in Vegas at the Aria main event prep camp.
Okay, that's terrific. That's exclusively for Final Table listeners. While we're talking about the World Series, I do have to ask you about something controversial that Dennis and I talked about at length last week, and that is the hard stop rule. Dennis, explain this again, because I always get it wrong.
Well, no, it's very simple. They have a maximum of 10 levels that they will play, and it makes absolutely no difference whether you're one person from the bubble, whether you're heads up, what the situation is. At the end of those 10 levels, the dealer stops dealing, and it's over till the next day. They give absolutely no discretionary voice to the floor person or the tournament director. It's a hard and fast rule, 10 levels, and that's it. We are done.
I don't know if this is because I'm French or what, but I'm very laissez-faire when it comes to a lot of these things. I guess I just sort of accept that there's things that I have control over and things that I don't. And this is, I'm like not on the WSOP committee or anything like that. I don't have influence over this kind of thing. So this is one of those things I just accept. I don't get too wound up about it. I see people's points about that it's sort of absurd if you're one person away from, you know, a final table or whatever. But, I mean, so I guess it's one of those things that I look at, like, it probably, if there is a problem with it, it'll be realized and fixed for next year.
Yeah. Hopefully the committee will talk about that. The reason we brought it up last week is because Mike Sexton and Chris Vioxx, a guy from Illinois, had gotten two heads up in their event and were told, you have to stop and we're going to come back and finish this the next afternoon, rather than just continuing to play it out. Now, everybody knows heads up play can go on for 2, 3, 4, hopefully not 5 hours. But if you're there and you have that adrenaline pumping and you've got something on your opponent and you want to be able to continue using it against them, wouldn't you be disappointed when they called timeout?
Yeah, actually, I totally see that. I mean, yeah, that's a bummer. That's sort of like, I mean, you know, poker's a competition. And you're in the heat of the battle and then, wow, like heads up and they make you come back the next day. I mean, I guess it's still a level playing field. So, you know, being a poker player, you should be able to adapt to all conditions and your opponent has to adapt to it also. So that would be the counter argument. But in an ideal world, no, I think it'd be best to avoid that kind of thing for sure.
Yeah, I just wish they would compromise it in some way that they can use logical sense. And the tournament director could be called over there, and he could talk to both of the players, and they could come to something reasonable. Yes, you know, if either one of them would say, I'm tired or whatever, it's over, it's done, that's no big deal. But if they both say, no, I really want to play this out, I don't want to come back for what could be just one hand the next day, then they should be allowed to finish it out, I would think.
Okay, before we move on to something else, I just want to mention that don't bother tweeting Vanessa anymore. We already have a winner. Somebody named, or Twitter named, Poca Paloma was the first one to tweet work hard, play hard to Vanessa. And so, Poca Paloma, congratulations. You've got yourself a seat in the main event prep camp Vanessa's doing at the Aria on Thursday, April 7th. Congratulations, and thanks for giving that away, Vanessa. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'll be in touch with Poca Paloma. I'll send you a message on Twitter about how to go ahead and collect your award.
Okay. Now, I got to get an opinion about something from both of you. Sometimes we like to throw something at our guests, and I don't know if Dennis knows about this either. But last season, Vanessa, you played on The Big Game, the Poker Stars TV show, which I was a huge fan of. You were on there for a few episodes, right?
Yeah, I played twice, yep.
Are you on this season?
When you say this season, is there one airing right now? I don't know which one's airing.
Season 2 just started airing yesterday.
Yeah, I think, I played two rounds of it, and I think it's two different seasons, so I think I am, but I'm not 100% sure.
All right. Well, I'm happy to have the show back.
I should know these things, but I don't. Sorry.
That's okay. I'm happy to have the show back. I watch it on PokerStars.tv, the website, because it's no longer on broadcast television after Black Friday, which is a shame, because it is really a terrific format, and I love it. But I want to play for you some audio of a show that's not part of this week's show, but will air later on in the season. And the voices you'll hear in here, well, the main voices are Phil Hellmuth and Tony G, and you'll also hear Jennifer Tilley and Joe Hashem. What happens is Jennifer Tilley's under the gun. She straddles, and then Tony G restraddles. I think that's what happens here, or somebody straddles, and Tony G announces he's going to restraddle. And then listen to this for about 90 seconds, and then let's talk about it. Roll it.
I'll over straddle. I'll over.
Double straddle from Tony.
You're taking away my straddle energy.
I'm not. I'm putting more money in there for the good players.
Okay, let's see. That's like wasted money.
You can raise him comfortably knowing that he hasn't looked at his cards.
Action folds to Rankowski, who's out. Phil Hellmuth, ace jack.
A lot of money out there already.
And it's unopened.
Real money. All right, I open for the pot.
Pots it.
And you looked, right?
Well, I think I looked. Allegedly, I looked.
Tony.
I'm all in.
Pot limit, brah.
Without looking?
Without looking.
Pretty sure he looked.
Well, you can't be all in.
66.
Tony repots it with ace king.
All right, all right. You slow down. You slow down a bit. Are you going to save the rest?
Not if he believes you haven't looked.
Helmuth now facing a raise and an angle shot.
It's hard to believe that you always have a hand against me.
Look, you could see the flop and get rid of it as well. Right? You can play good.
Without looking too?
I'm not looking. I haven't looked. I don't care. I know it's a random hand, and I don't got a random hand.
Wow, all that talking makes me think he's strong. I was for sure going to call before that.
15 on top, Tony.
He's saying he hasn't looked, though.
He most certainly looked. Did no one see him?
He's saying he didn't look.
Yeah, you wouldn't lie, Tony, would you?
I wouldn't lie. You can check my hand if you want. You can tell him the truth.
You didn't look at either card.
I haven't looked.
You promise?
Ask Joe. I mean, I haven't looked.
I can't say anything, but...
I'm not going to look.
That's between you and Phil.
He says he hasn't looked. He hasn't looked.
I didn't see
it. Do you believe him? Yeah. He said he hasn't looked. Only Joe looked.
Did you look at your cards at all? I mean, it's...
Look, the people at home, no, I haven't looked.
Show that's going to air later this season on PokerStars.tv. Tony keeps saying he hasn't looked, but we as the viewers do know that he has looked, and this is, to me, an incredible angle shot, and you, too, as professional poker players, I'm curious what your view is on something like this, and we'll start with our guest, Vanessa Russo.
Oh, man, you know, I really like Tony. I mean, yeah, he has his antics on TV and all of that, but away from the table, he's a really nice guy. He's always been really nice to me, so I hate saying anything bad, but I have to be honest with that. I really don't like that. That, to me, you know, poker players are constantly fighting the misperception that we're a bunch of shady characters. I mean, and it's really my view that poker players are actually, integrity-wise, a great group of people. Yes, we have to bluff. That's part of the game we play. So we bluff with our chips all the time. But outright lying like that, I mean, these people know each other at the table. To me, that's not an angle that I would take, and I certainly wouldn't really respect someone who did that to me at the table. I'm disappointed it was Tony who did it there.
Well, I agree with Vanessa totally on this, except I think I'd even go further. If I'm not mistaken, I heard that right. And then he's trying to involve Joe Hesham in it too.
He actually passes his cards to Joe, and Joe looks at them, and then Joe kind of tries not to make a face or say anything and slides them back, and that's when he says, "I can't say anything here. This is between you and Phil."
I would be furious with him if he did that with me if I was in Joe's position. That is just so wrong. Because you're angle shooting, you're doing something that's very, at the very least, questionable. And I think Vanessa was being nice to him. I would not be that nice to him, frankly. I think it's wrong, period. And then to involve another person at the table and try to get him to support you in that kind of an angle shot, wow. If I was Joe Hesham, I would not be happy with Tony G right now. In fact, I'd be upset with him.
To me, this is the same as somebody telling you, look, you should fold, I have aces. And then after you fold your kings, they turn over pocket fours or something like that. But this may actually be worse because, as you said, he is involving somebody else. And it's televised, and we can see that he's lying. That makes it so much worse. You're absolutely right, Vanessa, about the public perception of poker players. I like Tony G. I don't know him personally, but I like watching him when he's in events. He's a very entertaining guy at the table. I think he's 100% wrong on this.
Yeah, that's just
yeah,
so bad.
Did he address it at all? Has he said anything about it?
He has not said anything about it, and we don't know what happens at the end of the hand because they're holding it until that show airs later this season on the big game. So we'll just have to wait and see.
This might be one of the few times that 99% of the people are going to be supporting Phil.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of situations where there's a lot of empathy for Phil Helmuth, especially on this show. But we have given him his props this summer because he's having an amazing run at the World Series of Poker. Vanessa, we thank you for your honesty and for sharing your expertise with us here today. Let's get the plug in again for Thursday, July 7th. It's the Big Slick Boot Camp Main Event Prep Camp from 11 to 4 at the Aria Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. If you're going out for the main event, go a day early and go and see this, and you'll learn enough that maybe it'll help you get through day 1, 2, 3, 4. 4, 5, 6, and 7. And then you'll be one of our November 9 guests this year. For information, again, go to BigSlickBootCamp.com or call 877-33-SLICK. And wouldn't it be ironic, Vanessa, if one of your students was at that final table with you?
Well, I'd like to think that it wouldn't be by accident. I would like to think that it'd be, hopefully I can teach the students a thing or two, and also hopefully, I guess, we both run well, and if I could make the final table, that'd be sick, and if one of my students could, I mean, that would be just, like, insane.
One quick thing, if I can squeeze it in here, I'll be fast. Deneen, my better half, went to your boot camp down at the PCA, and this is a major compliment to you. She's playing a satellite today to try and get into the women's event, and the first thing she did last night was pull up all the material that you had given her and review everything that you had said.
Oh, that's awesome. I love to hear that. Well, good luck to her.
And right. Vanessa, good luck to you with the rest of the series. Thanks for your time. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Vanessa Russo with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at Harris Poker Room in St. Louis. Thanks for listening to the Final Table Tuesdays at 3 on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.